Hello.
Hi.
You okay?
It's been a morning already.
You just got up.
No, I didn't.
That's worse.
I know. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are
Mediocre
content. Blair's having a day already.
I'm
It's only
having a
morning.
day. First of all, I've been up for 2 hours.
Just two.
Just
Only
two, and
two.
I'm already having a day. It is Monday. We are recording this the day before. Don't judge us.
Or do. That's also fine. Look, we're
Yeah.
busy, okay? I
We're
had trunk or
busy.
treat this weekend. We had a fall festival this weekend. We missed the Blue Angels show, which, well,
Oh,
I mean, we heard them, but
sure.
I mean, we saw them in Pensacola. So I was like,
It's fine.
yeah,
It's fine.
it's fine. I wanted to go to the fall festival and eat crap food. And it was great. Actually, can I rant for just a one moment about
Please,
the
please do.
festivals? Okay.
I've been
So,
ranting for the past 30 minutes.
so my rant is this, and I apologize to anybody who works booths. I know that it's difficult out there and you're probably struggling, when you go to cons or festivals and you're competing against these people, because one of my biggest pet peeves is walking into a festival and expecting cool, handcrafted, handmade, or like upcycled stuff.
Sure.
And I see Temu like purchased charms stuck on like nickel earring backs, and it dry, and you're charging $15 a pair. That is, it was everywhere. It was rampant. It was like people purchased other people's stuff or purchased like warehouse kind of pieces and then sold it at the most extreme markups I have ever seen. The earrings themselves, she had a whole booth of them. And I know that they're that way because I actually recognized a pair that I purchased from another festival. And I was like, I knew it. I knew these were not handmade. And then I went into her booth. They were $15 a pair. And also, you could get two if you wanted to pay $28. So you save $2 on warehouse grade like jewelry. Anyway, that's my biggest rant. That's my biggest
No,
problem.
I think that's reasonable. If you go to a
Yeah.
place and expect
Yeah.
artisan quality things and pay artisan quality prices, like
Yeah.
You want to feel like you're supporting a small business, not a scam.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, at a fall festival. Okay, at
That's
a
rough.
fall
That
festival.
is not in the fall culture.
It is not. But on the plus side, I saw a lot of very cute stuff that were crocheted. And kudos to you people that know how to crochet and knit because it's very adorable. I didn't buy
Very
anything,
nice.
but it's
I know.
very cute.
I almost bought it was a crocheted s'more with like
Nice.
two little eyes and a smiley face. And I walked away for a second because we were going to go get some food, came back, and it was gone. And I will forever mourn it because I don't know, for those of you who are Disney people out there, you might know what I'm talking about. But like Disney has these things or this collection of, pins and like stuffed animals called Munchlings, and they're like super cute and they're like Disney characters, but they're like food, and I'm obsessed with them.
I love them.
And they had one that was a Baymax from Big Hero 6 as a s'more, and it was like a stuffed animal, and I wanted it so badly. And we were gonna go to Disneyland to get it, but by the time we got there, they were all gone.
Of course.
Because naturally. And so I'm like, okay. So I'm like trying to figure out online. Like I saved the page on the Disney store online to see if I could buy it online. But then eventually they took it down because they weren't going to come back with another one. And so I was like, well, this crochet s'more is like
True.
similar but different. And this is so
True.
exciting. And I missed that too. So it's just not in the cards for me to like get a s'more stuffed animal that is cutesy.
I mean, at least I know what to look for Christmas.
Right.
It's
So
been
if
very enlightening.
Mom, if you're listening,
It would be great if everyone just gifted you s'mores for your birthday or for
Oh my
Christmas,
God.
and then you're overwhelmed with
Yes.
just s'more content.
When we got the cats, my
Yeah.
whole like Christmas and birthday that
Cat
year were
stuff.
just cat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to me, I guess, for the
Literally.
cats.
Literally.
Oh, that's great. Anyway, rant
So,
over.
this is the first time I think you can see both of the cats, because Salem's butt you can kind of see like right here.
I do
It's
see
right
his
there.
little
And
butt.
then, of course, Jinxie's right there.
Jinx has decided he's now part of the table.
He is. Yeah.
He's so
That's
cute.
actually not a bad spot for him. His little paws are curled in, which is cute.
Ugh, I love it when Puma does that.
There
She's the perfect
is,
loaf.
of course, like right up here in front of
Sure.
him, there's like a beautiful bed. But are we having that? No, we're not having
No,
that.
it's like Lynx, who's laying on the floor, the hardwood floor, next to the giant cat tree that he could be sleeping in.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
Or
good.
the cat bed that's right behind me.
How dare they?
It's ridiculous
I
behavior.
know. All
Anyway.
right. All right. So I'm going to disclaim real quick. Obviously, we're out here just researching, doing the best we can. We want you to research and do the best you can in your life. So if you find something that we say to be off-putting or weird or like not true to your knowledge, because you know more than us about this particular subject, please let us know. You know how to do that. The comment section is this way for a reason.
That's right.
So with that, Kirsten's doing the good news this week.
Yes, and I'm going to start the good news with cancel culture. How fun is that?
So fun.
It's actually very fun. And some of you might have already heard about this, but just in case you haven't, this is really good news. The Federal Trade Commission has announced the final click-to-cancel rule that will actually require sellers to make canceling enrollments at least as easy to use as the sign-up process, which we're getting into it. Here's why this is such a big deal. The actions are part of the FTC's ongoing review of the 1973 negative option rule, which describes a transaction in which sellers can interpret a customer's failure to take action, either to reject an offer or cancel a membership, as an agreement to be charged again and again and again and again. While negative option marketing programs can be convenient for
Oh,
sellers,
okay.
yeah, convenient for sellers and consumers, the FTC receives thousands of complaints about recurring subscriptions every year for obvious reasons. It's so hard to cancel stuff these days.
True.
The number of complaints has steadily increased over the past 5 years, obviously because we're now in a technological age and we're kind of subscriptioned out. So everything's a subscription now, so it makes sense that they're getting more complaints. And the commission received nearly 70 customer complaints per day on average in this year alone. It's insanity, right?
Wow. Yeah.
The new rule prohibits requiring consumers who signed up through an app or website to have to go through a chatbot or wait on hold on the phone or go
Yeah.
physically, all those things. It's going to prevent all of that, which is mostly taken advantage of by gym club memberships, as you can imagine,
Of
that usually
course.
require a certified letter or an in-person visit to the business in order to cancel it. And you know what's really messed up? I have had a personal experience with this. We used to have in Lynchburg, actually, a Gold's Gym membership, and we canceled it in person. We said we no longer want to do this. They said they canceled it, and they kept charging us. When we went to go back to in-person recancel, it was gone. It had been closed, and we had to fight with them for hours on the phone to get the stupid membership refunded for the months that they kept charging and officially canceled. It was a nightmare. Anyway, so the new rule would require them to offer an online option to cancel on the website or have a call in where they can just simply be like, hey, I'm done. And the commission's updated rule will apply to almost all negative option programs in any kind of media and will require sellers to provide important information about obtaining consumers' billing info and get customers' informed consent to the negative option features before charging them. So it's not just something they can just willy-nilly throw out there and be like, well, whatever.
Right.
The click to cancel rule is one of the last pieces of the Biden administration effort to get rid of what's considered junk fees, which included new rules requiring airlines to promptly give automatic cash refunds when they cancel or significantly change flights, which I know a lot of people faced this past year as well.
Definitely.
So definitely good to have that on the books. The final rule will provide a legal framework by prohibiting sellers from the following. And these are actual points from the rule. Failing to provide a simple mechanism to cancel the negative option feature and immediately halt charges. Misrepresenting any material fact made while marketing goods or services with a negative option feature. Failing to clearly and conspicuously, there we go, disclose material terms prior to obtaining a consumer's billing information in connection with a negative option feature. And finally, failing to obtain a consumer's express informed consent to the negative option feature before charging the consumer. So you got to check all those boxes and in order to officially start charging the consumer, the consumer's aware, and then they can also cancel whenever the heck they freaking want to, which is how it should be.
Yes. Anyway.
Since March of 2023, opening of a public comment period, the commission received more than 16,000 comments from consumers, federal and state government agencies, consumer groups, and trade associations regarding these issues. And the commission ended up dropping two proposed changes that might have required sellers to provide annual reminders of the negative option feature of their subscription, and one that banned sellers from telling consumers seeking to cancel their subscription about plan modifications or reasons to keep their existing agreement, which is super annoying because that also happens on apps when they're like, are you sure you want to cancel? And then you hit something else that isn't continuing
by accident.
And
because they make it hard to find the cancel button.
So it's like, come on now. The commission voted 3-2 to approve the publication of the final rule in the Federal Register, with commissioners Melissa Holyoak and Andrew Ferguson voting no. Rude. Not surprisingly, industry leaders complain that it forces an undue burden on businesses. Okay, well, it places an undue burden on the consumer too when they can't unsubscribe from something that's eating away their finances.
Totally.
So this is really great. It's passed. We're moving forward. So be on the lookout, especially you gym junkies that have been dealing with this probably forever, and any Verizon users, because I know that to be the case for us as well, unfortunately.
Can we talk about how instead of quitting his own Verizon plan, Chris decided, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to bring Blair on to my Verizon plan.
Okay.
So we're just going to be on Verizon until we die.
That's basically the way it ends up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we were thinking about switching over, but because we traded in our phone however many months ago, they were like, oh, well, you're locked in order to like continue to receive whatever.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's number one.
Cool.
Okay, so the next piece of good news has to do with cheese, which I don't know how you could go wrong with cheese, to be honest.
You can't.
A father of five who was given a $4.99 cheese making kit as a Christmas present now runs his own artisan creamery in his freaking garage.
Oh my god.
Goals. He's not just making cheese, guys. He's winning multiple awards for his cheesy creations. His name is Matthew Lloyd, and his interest in cheddars and Edams, which I've never heard of, was sparked five Christmases ago when his sister-in-law gave him this novelty set, including a cloth, the thermometer, and a rennet tablet containing milk curdling enzymes, enough for a singular batch of cheese. The cheese making process was apparently so exciting and enjoyable that Lloyd began experimenting with different varieties and flavors, which is, I guess, what you do when
Love
you want
that.
Cheese. He's actually a construction consultant, but he now sells the homemade goods from his backyard creamery and calls it the Rennet Works. And this is in Shropshire, England, which I feel like is just the place you'd be making cheese in your garage, probably.
Totally.
He taught himself the nuances of cheese making, he did this from like books and internet, the way that any real self-starter would. And there are about 5,500 cheeses entered from all over the world to these different kinds of competitions with cheese. So he threw in a couple of his own entries, and he actually won Best Soft Cheese with Flavorings in Great Britain and the Best International Novice Award for his freaking garage cheese.
Wow. Love that.
Very impressive. He spent 7 months converting his garage into a cheese factory featuring gleaming stainless steel work stations, secondhand equipment, including 100-quart pots, and home-built cheese press that he just decided to build himself because he's a construction guy, and I guess that's just what you do. Wow. The Rennet Works Cheese Company is already supplying a local deli and two high-class cheese shops with several creations made in single batches of about 10 kilograms, which is equal to about 22 pounds each. It's obviously a very young business. He can only produce so much. He is apparently taking it very seriously and is continuing to learn and try to make sustainable cheeses and all of those wonderful things. But anyway, he's a cheese man, I guess. Now.
Love that for him.
Who doesn't want to be a cheese man? So yeah, that's my good news.
Oh, very nice.
You can cancel your gym membership and make cheese.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everybody be quiet. Jinx, I think, is going to try and get in his bed.
He's going to have perfect silence and serenity to decide whether it's more comfy than the hard table he was sitting on.
Nope. He's just going to walk in front of the screen. That's
okay.
Nice.
All right. He's so helpful.
Going for the window. All right. So today we're talking about ghost hunting, which is a very spoopy topic, I feel. We're going to talk about what a ghost is, like the definition of a ghost. And then we're going to talk about the origins of why people think ghosts exist and what they did to like prevent that. And then we're going to talk about the hunting of ghosts. All right.
Okay.
I told you guys it's an interesting day today for me. So just hold on to your hats. Okay. So since ancient times, ghost stories, tales of spirits who return from the dead to haunt the places they left behind, have figured prominently in the folklore of many cultures around the world. A rich subset of these tales involve historical figures ranging from queens and politicians to writers and gangsters, many of whom died early, violent, or mysterious deaths.
Ooh, nice.
What is a ghost? Well, thank you for asking me, Kirsten.
You're welcome.
The concept of a ghost.
Wait. Star, you know what? Rub me in. Just.
What is a ghost?
No. Blair.
Yes, Kirsten.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure.
I know you got this episode around ghosts or whatever. Yeah. What is a ghost?
Thank you so much for asking. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome.
So the concept of a ghost, also known as a specter, is based on the ancient idea that a person's spirit exists separately from his or her body and may continue to exist after that person dies. Because of this idea, many societies began to use funeral rituals as a way of ensuring that the dead person's spirit would not return to haunt the living.
Fair enough.
I feel like the Egyptians are very famous for this.
Absolutely. They're like, gut it, embalm it, put it in a stone structure, call it a day.
Yeah. Make sure they dead.
Did
you know that the notorious mobster Al Capone has reportedly appeared to disrespectful visitors to his funeral plot?
Oh.
Which is located in Illinois, for those who don't know. And also, if you go to his old cell in Alcatraz, you may or may not hear banjo music coming from the cell. Chris and I have visited his cell in Alcatraz. We did so at night and did not hear any banjo music. They do play it on the tour just for funsies.
Sure.
But I have not heard it independently of that.
I can say for certain, I have no desire to do that either.
No, we're good. Alcatraz is a very creepy place too. Just putting that out there. Places that are haunted are usually believed to be associated with some occurrence or emotion in the past, in the ghost's past. They are often a former home or the place where he or she died. Aside from actual ghostly apparitions, traditional signs of haunting range from strange noises, lights, odors, or breezes to the displacement of objects, bells that ring spontaneously, or musical instruments that seem to play on their own. All your usual ghostly things.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Very common. So the earliest ghost sighting is recorded in the first century AD. The great Roman author and statesman Pliny the Younger recorded one of the first notable ghost stories in his letters, which became famous for their vivid account of life during the heyday of the Roman Empire.
Fancy.
Pliny reported that the specter of an old man with a long beard rattling chains was haunting his house in Athens. The Greek writer Lucian and Pliny's fellow Roman Plautus also wrote memorable ghost stories.
Are we sure he didn't just see like the ghost of Christmas future or something?
Right. No, it's the Christmas past has the chains on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I think Scrooge might know a little bit more about that one.
Maybe Charles Dickens got it from them. I don't know.
So, mm-hmm.
Centuries later in AD 856, 856, if you will, the first poltergeist, a ghost that causes physical disturbances such as loud noises or objects that are falling or being thrown around, was reported at a farmhouse in Germany. The poltergeist tormented the family living there by throwing stones and starting fires, among other things.
So freaking rude.
Yeah, so rude. Rude. Yeah. Not to be confused with Alpengeist, which is, in fact, a roller coaster at Busch Gardens Williamsburg. Thank you so much.
True.
All right. All right. So three famous historical ghosts. One of the most friendly reported ghost sightings in England dates back to the 16th century. Anne Boleyn, the second wife of King Henry VIII and mother of Queen Elizabeth I, was executed at the Tower of London in May 1536. After being accused of witchcraft, treason, incest, and adultery. So I'm just saying,
laundry list.
Seems like a nice lady. Sightings of Boleyn's ghost have been reported at the Tower, as well as in various other locations, including her childhood home, Hever Castle in Kent.
I honestly love that movie, The Other Boleyn Girl.
I have not seen it.
Oh,
I need to see it.
It's very good.
Okay.
It's very good.
Yeah. Everything I've ever read about her, I love. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
America's own rich tradition of historical ghosts begins with one of its most illustrious founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin. Beginning in the late 19th century, Franklin's ghost was seen near the library of the American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Some reports held that the statue of Franklin in front of the society comes to life and dances in the streets.
This ain't no night at the museum kind of stuff. What are we doing?
I don't know. Only in America.
Only in America.
Though many ghost sightings have been reported at the White House in Washington, D.C. over the years, perhaps no political figure has made so frequent of an appearance in the afterlife as Abraham Lincoln. The nation's 16th president, who was killed by an assassin's bullet in April 1865, Lincoln, formerly a lawyer and congressman from Illinois, is said to have been seen wandering near the old Springfield Capitol building, as well as in his nearby law offices. At the White House, everyone from first ladies to queens to prime ministers have reported seeing the ghost or feeling the presence of Honest Abe, particularly during the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt, another president who guided the country through a time of great upheaval and war.
I've actually heard of Lincoln and his ghostly walks through DC, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the most prominent ones I've actually heard about. So that's really cool. Also, take a nap, Abe. It's been years.
Literally. Just
rest, my guy.
The man needs to rest.
He does.
He's done a lot for this country.
He's done enough.
Yeah. Haunted places. Some locations simply seem to lend themselves to hauntings, perhaps due to the dramatic or grisly events that occurred there in the past. Over the centuries, sightings of special armies have been reported on famous battlefields, spectral armies, sorry, around the world, including important battle sites from the English Civil War in the 17th century, the Bloody Civil War battlefield of Gettysburg, and the World War I sites of Gallipoli, which is near Turkey, and Somme, which is near France.
May I interject very quickly?
Please do.
I'm going to call my brother out very quickly, Chris.
Oh, please do.
Speaking of like Gettysburg and Williamsburg and all the hauntings, as a Virginia native, we're very, you know, we know.
Totally.
We know.
And the whole lost colony thing is a whole other thing.
Don't even get me started.
I know.
Right. So there's lots of historical battlefronts in Virginia, if you don't know. And as a kid, you visit a lot of these on your own. You can walk them. They're usually nature parks or paths or trails now. But sometimes, you know, you go as a class because history or whatever. But there was one in particular, and I don't know if Chris remembers this, but I very distinctly remember this. We were at one of the trails with our uncle and our papa, and we were walking around, and there was like this well area that it's like an old well, and you can like look inside. It's got like the whole little box outside that's wooden, and right beside it, there's like a tree, just being a tree, right?
Sure.
That's not really important, right? Yeah. Right. All of a sudden, we're looking into the well and we start hearing a cracking noise and a limb from the tree is like falling. And my grandpa is like, run, run, go, go, go. And so we run and it falls right where we were around the well. And I'm not saying it was ghost stories or anything, but it's pretty spooks, right? Nothing was going on. And then that limb just falls. Okay, that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, we're driving home from that trip same day and it's dark out already. And I don't remember which bridge this is. And if there's a Virginia native or a history buff that knows, or maybe you know, we're driving down this road and it's either my uncle or my papa. It was one of the two. They were telling the story about how, because there was also a very large Native American population there over centuries and centuries, there's actually a Passover or a bridge that people say that around midnight, if you drive over that bridge, they will actually be like singing their songs and blocking the bridge, and they will run at your car if you try to drive over the causeway.
Interesting.
At night. And here I am as a kid at night sitting in the back of this car just like with my hands
covering
my eyes because I didn't want to see anything.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there as a Virginia native. Those are two kind of spooky wookies.
Yes.
In that realm of war and like centuries of lives that have gone through there. It is spooky. That's
all I love it. Love it. Love to know about it.
Anyway.
Thank you, Kirsten.
You're so welcome.
Another particularly active center for paranormal activity is the HMS Queen Mary, a cruise ship built in the 1936 for the Cunard White Star Line. After serving in the British Royal Navy in World War II, the 81,000-ton ship retired in Long Beach, California in 1967. The plan was to turn it into a floating luxury hotel and resort, and since then, the Queen Mary has become notorious for its spectral presences, with more than 50 ghosts reported over the years. The ship's last chief engineer, John Smith, ironic,
right?
We were just talking about Virginia. reported hearing unexplained sounds and voices of the area from the area near the ship's bow in almost the same location as the doomed British aircraft cruiser, the Horikoa, had pierced a hole when it sank after an accidental wartime crash that killed more than 300 sailors abroad.
Ugh.
Smith also claimed to have encountered the ghost of Winston Churchill, or at least his spectral cigar smoke, in the Prime Minister's old stateroom aboard the ship. Many visitors of the Queen Mary have reported seeing phantom crew members in blue overalls walking the decks around the ship's swimming pool, reports have been made of mysterious splashes and ghostly women in old-fashioned bathing suits or dresses, along Fancy. With trails of wet footsteps appearing long after the pool had been drained.
I mean, they're just trying to have a good time in the afterlife.
So if anyone has been on YouTube for a long period of time, you will know that Shane Dawson and his squad went on the Queen Mary and like spent the night. And it was very interesting. It was like a huge YouTuber thing for a while to go on the Queen Mary and like see if they could see any ghosts. I enjoyed watching that content. Did we see any ghosts? No.
No.
Did we hear some weird sounds? Sure.
They've been orchestrated. Probably. Yeah.
Anyway. Among major cities, New York is especially rich with ghost stories.
Not surprising.
So many people have died there.
Yeah.
Anyway, the spirit of Peter Stuyvesant, Stuyvesant?
Yeah,
the city's last Dutch colonial governor has been seen stomping around the East Village on his wooden leg.
Ah, okay.
And shortly after his death in 1672.
When you said,
that's the guy with the wooden leg I saw. I like, oh my God.
Stomping around. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Now it makes sense.
The author Mark Twain is believed to haunt the stairwell of his one-time village apartment building, while the ghost of poet Dylan Thomas is said to sometimes occupy his usual corner table at the West Village's White Horse Tavern.
That's in Rhode Island.
Wait, what?
White Horse Tavern?
Why is it in the West Village?
I don't know. There must be multiple White Horse Taverns. There's one in Rhode Island that's also very haunted for similar reasons.
Interesting. So
that's why I was like, that is definitely a Rhode Island place.
Interesting.
Why are you copying us, New York?
Yeah. So I guess the reason why he haunts it is because he drank a fatal 18 shots of scotch in 1953.
Oh, okay. I don't think the one in Rhode Island is haunted for that reason. That's pretty special.
Perhaps the most famous New York ghost is that of Aaron Burr, which if you've watched Hamilton for any length of time, you'll know who that is. Who served as vice president under Thomas Jefferson, but is best known for killing Alexander Hamilton in a duel in 1804. Burr's ghost is said to roam the streets of his old neighborhood, also the West Village. Burr's spectral activity is focused particularly on one restaurant, one if by land, two if by sea, which is located in a bar, or located in Barrow Street. In a Barrow Street building that was once Burr's carriage house. Sorry.
That was a lot of bees.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Northeast of America is the place to get the hauntings. New York.
Well, and then Salem is there, right?
Massachusetts, Rhode Island, any of those areas, because they were settled first. They had the most BS going on most of the time. And they also, unfortunately, were in the cold. So a lot of people passed because it was freaking cold and they didn't have central heating back then. So
unless you were a witch, you were burned anyway.
That's fair. In which drowned. Case you were very hot.
Right.
If that's the case.
Indeed.
Boy.
All right. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about this.
Congratulations, you've made it to the ad segment of the podcast.
Don't worry, the podcast is now, thankfully, halfway over, and we think you'll have what it takes to push through to the end. You got this.
We completely understand if you have to bow out for now, but if you do, make sure to come back at some point to try and finish what you started. Or not, that's also fine.
If you got what it takes to continue,
we know you do.
Keep listening so you can get this over with, and be sure to tune in to future
mediocre content.
So our desire to communicate with the dead led to the birth of paranormal research and spiritualism in the 1800s. You're welcome. Now, ghost hunters have traded the embroideries and candlesticks of the Victorian era for technology.
It's very dramatic.
So nobody's using their Ouija board anymore.
Well, unless it's a spoof, I guess.
Yeah. Television viewers seem to have the hunger for the paranormal investigations and that feels scientific.
I feel like they just have a hunger for views.
I don't know. It's kind of like true crime. Mm-hmm. It's like it gets you a little, mm-hmm. your cortisol levels go up a little bit. And you're like, this is nice.
Mm.
So Ghost Hunters, which features members of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, has aired 251 episodes and 12 specials.
Jeez.
While Zach Bagans' Ghost Adventures clocks at 231 episodes, 49 specials, multiple spinoffs, and a book, Ghost Hunting for Dummies, which suspiciously features many passages that look plagiarized.
I love that so much. Good for you, Zach.
Millennials may be more familiar with BuzzFeed's runaway success, Unsolved Supernatural, in which believer Ryan Bergara and skeptic Shane Madej, sorry, Shane, if I said that wrong, explore creepy buildings with a host of sciency looking instruments. They have now taken their approach to Watchers Ghost Files, where the gadgets are even more expensive. But as these superstar ghost investigators and the local hobbyists, they inspire wave around fancy equipment in dark rooms. They are actually engaging in science or merely playing pretend. Are they? We don't know. Unsure.
Yeah.
As seen on TV, every ghost hunter worth their salt will carry around an electromagnetic field meter. Oof. It is used in the belief that ghosts give off, interact with, or even manipulate electromagnetic fields, and that an EMF detector that lights up might indicate the presence of spirits.
That's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
We're a little skeptical. We're not superstitious. We're a little stitious.
Just a little. I mean, the only EMF meter I've seen successful is in a video game, which is not comparable to real life. So
that's correct. Oh, speaking of video games that you need to play, and maybe Tyler will play it with you, is Untitled Goose Game.
I've heard of that game. Good.
Oh my God. Chris and I just played it last night. It's so fun. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. Anyway.
Yes. At some point we need to play Goose Goose Duck, which is like an Among Us spinoff. It's very fun.
Oh God.
Anyway.
Kenny Biddle, the former credulous ghost hunter, is now an investigator with an interest in the careful testing paranormal claims. He often writes about his experiences in Skeptical Inquirer magazine. Quote, "I've literally seen ghost hunters," he told me.
Nice, Kenny. Nice.
"At a wall right next to a light switch. And had their EMF meter spiking, and they're like, look, there's nothing around here that can make this go off. Of course, in a world ever more reliant on electricity, we are surrounded by electromagnetic fields, and it is the duty of ghost hunters to rule out normal explanations for their readings. But in Biddle's experience, they typically do a very cursory look around the to rule out anything obvious before concluding that it could be a ghost.
Sure.
Moreover, the devices they can afford are single access EMF meters, which need to be rotated around all three axes in every single spot before taking a reading. Good luck finding a ghost hunter who does that."
Facts.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Also, when you said the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, all I could think about was the Quibbler.
Literally. Yes.
That's what it feels like.
Harry Potter reference.
Yes.
There is, of course, no reason to believe that ghosts, if they exist, would be able to interact with electromagnetic fields in their disembodied states. That dubious idea might be traced back to a famous movie. I believe the idea came from Ghostbusters.
Of all places.
Biddle speculated. It is, its characters use similar looking detectors, aka their fancy backpacks.
Mm-hmm.
And EMF meters became popular in the late 1980s, early 1990s among ghost hunting groups, and a few years after the release of the movie.
Naturally. Naturally.
Ghost hunters have a habit of just adapting any kind of technology, especially if it beeps. If it makes noise or lights up, they want it. They don't know how it's supposed to work. All they know is that they saw it on TV and it looked cool.
Kenny
and
out here just Kenny throwing just people.
Putting them on blast.
Dang. Get it, Kenny. A real stan.
EMF meters are real devices with a real purpose. I chatted with Danny Plouf, a teacher at College Bois de Boulogne.
Boulogne? Some kind of
French. With a PhD in physics who has a long... This is why French people hate us.
We can't pronounce their words.
So a PhD in physics who has long given talks about the misuse of technology by ghost seekers. Quote, if ghosts truly emitted electromagnetic fields, Hydro-Québec, our public Canada. Utility for electricity. Oh, so yeah.
Oh, it's Canada. Yeah. Border. Anyway.
Put that together. Public utility for electricity power would know about it because they use these meters to detect leaks. And before you ask, yes, he did inquire to an employee of Hydro-Québec if they had ever detected ghosts, and the answer was no.
I mean, in Kenny's defense, genuinely, he's right. There are so many electromagnetic waves being filtered around the world these days with all different kinds of devices. It's almost constant. Mm-hmm. And similar, I imagine similar to like noise pollution and light pollution, it's a similar issue where you can't necessarily get a clean read on anything like that these days, unless like the signature is at a certain amp or whatever, you know.
Sure.
To be able to identify it.
I don't even know. Yeah. I mean, I think it's fun to watch people do it.
Yeah.
But I think if we're coming from this from a purely scientific standpoint, the odds are very low.
Yeah.
All right. So putting aside the EMF meter, ghost hunters on television can sometimes be seen talking to a flashlight. It can be quite freaky seeing a flashlight flicker on and off as an investigator who is standing in a dark, empty room. Questions as they question unseen spirits. Quote, did you die violently? They might ask. Or if you did, turn the flashlight on. After a long, dreadful silence, a flashlight comes to life, often accompanied by a musical stinger added in the editing room. But the creepy communication on display boils down to heat.
Right.
It has to be done with a mag light equipped with a xenon bulb. Crucially, this is a model that is turned on or off by screwing its head in or out, respectively. Leave the head somewhere in the middle and vibrations may cause it to turn on or off, giving the impression of communicating with the great beyond. But even without vibrations, the light will cycle through its on and off states if its head remains on the cusp of its on position. As this video demonstrates, the plastic lens in front of the bulb heats up by 13 degrees Celsius when the bulb is on. This causes the plastic to expand, which results in the flashlight head turning by 2.6 degrees, which puts the pressure on the metal spring at the bottom of the lamp, resulting in the electrical contact being broken. The bulb goes off. The plastic reflector starts to contract back, pressure on the spring is relieved, and the contact is reestablished. If you happen to be asking questions while the maglite cycles on and off, you'll be given the impression that otherworldly forces are using very primitive Morse code.
Also, feel free to check out the video that they're referring to so that you can see this in like real time as opposed to like on a video that's being curated by a hunter.
Correct.
Because it's obviously different.
Looking for visual cues to a haunting is one thing, but if you could hear ghosts, enter the spirit box, a device that quickly scans through radio frequencies sequentially without stopping when it lands on a radio station. Mm-hmm. The ghost hunter asks a question and the listener then listens to the bursts of white noise, occasionally interrupted by a stray word from a radio announcer. This is seen as ghosts manipulating the airwaves to communicate, which is actually very cool. And I wish people could do that, but they can't. Kenny Biddle and I held an impromptu demonstration while we were chatting, showing how anything coming out of this can be infused with meaning. Mm-hmm. He shouted, it's kind of like a palm reader or like a fortune teller situation. Mm-hmm. It's like self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing.
Yes. It's so vague that it could apply anywhere.
Exactly.
That's the rule.
Exactly. He shouted random words that might be heard over the spirit box. Chair, hair, red. My reaction, this is how she died. I could imagine a woman with red hair hanging herself by kicking the chair from under her. Any soundbite from a radio station heard through the spirit box can be used to feed an imaginary story.
Also, let's keep in mind, it's more pollution.
Right.
Radio waves. So
right.
You're going to pick up that stuff.
Totally. To up the ante, Biddle built a Faraday cage, a box that blocks electromagnetic waves like radio signals, and he brings it to a ghost to ghost investigations when he knows a spirit box will be used. Inside the Faraday cage, the spirit box cannot receive the signals broadcast by radio stations. If a ghost can truly manipulate electromagnetic fields, it should be able to enter the cage and generate a signal. Mm-hmm. So far, Biddle reports that hasn't happened. As Plouf pointed out to me, if I were asked to generate an AM or FM radio signal right here on the spot, would I be able to? The answer is no. So how is it that I would gain this knowledge upon dying?
Fair. Very fair.
Are you saying ghosts can't learn things? Is that what you're saying?
Can't teach a dead dog new tricks, I guess.
Oh, no. Okay.
Let the puns begin. Yeah. We're halfway through, so. I like that.
Undeterred, ghost hunters often refuse to strengthen their methodology, simply buying more expensive equipment and inviting murky signals in.
Also, can I just say, why are you trying to coax a ghost to do any kind of bidding? Just let them live if they out there or dead, whatever the option is. Just let them be. They don't care about you. They don't care about your stupid questions. They got stuff to do. Okay?
Do they?
I don't know.
So this is my other thing. Like, you know how they said they were trying to like see if the ghost would go in the Faraday box to change the radio?
Yeah.
Okay, so but like what if ghosts are afraid of boxes?
Okay. What if also they have like kind of an introverted personality? You know? They're not just gonna talk to a straight stranger danger. Okay.
You're right.
You've got this random dude walking up, shoving stuff in your face, and just like, no, walk in this box, you could trust me. No.
I feel like ghosts are inherently afraid of boxes because boxes equal coffin. Coffin equals death. Death fair. Equals resting in the ground and not like being free in the spiritual realm.
That's a good point. So don't maybe make it more
like a chair.
Triangle. Oh.
Yeah.
make it different, another shape. Open spaces. We need wide open spaces.
That's a great Dixie Chicks song. The Chicks song.
Whatever. Get out of here.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Moving on.
All right.
It's like weird segues.
I know. Abnormally hunters.
Anomaly.
Phenomena.
Do. We'll just get copyright striked for that one.
I literally can't do this. Oh my God. Okay. Okay. On Ghost Files, we witness an array of techno gadgets that act as false positive traps. Mm-hmm. Okay. There is the REM pod, which is a stout cylinder with colored lights that are said to be triggered by ghosts. The only problem is actually a repurposed musical instrument, which is a theremin. Does anybody know what a theremin is?
I have never heard of this in my entire existence, but
So one of Chris's friends has one.
Oh.
And it's like where there's like the invisible line, mm-hmm. or The best example that I can give you is if you watch American Horror Story Coven, one of the witches on there has one and she just like plays around with it the whole time. It's like, it's really cool.
It reminds me of like an electric harp. Or not like a literature, but those like those museum things that you can like put your hands through, but there's nothing there. Yes,
but there's nothing
there. Still makes some music.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. I liked playing with it. It made me feel very witchy.
Love that.
But yeah, it's like also kind of weird.
I don't know. Yeah. That's why it's used for spooks.
The spooky sound has graced science fiction movies like The Day the Earth Stood Still. It has two antennas which create audible electromagnetic fields whose pitch and volume can be altered by the movement of the player's hands in front of the instrument. Okay.
Fancy.
It is meant to be a cool science project for kids to put together and not a ghost detector. So.
I like how they say that. They're just like subtly saying this.
I'm just trying to give you guys the facts.
No,
right?
It's
like
just hilarious.
You know? The structured light sensor or the SLS camera, which is a repurposed Microsoft Xbox Kinect, a motion sensor that is used to detect a video game player's body in space so that they don't need to use the handheld controller, hooked up to a monitor, it would show crude stick figures in real time where it detects bodies. Except that it was never meant to be used in rooms with furniture and equipment, looking at the end of a sofa, the sensor gets confused and can assign a stick figure to it, making it look like there's a human-shaped presence in the room where there isn't. Given that it's used as infrared light to detect these invisible bodies, aiming an infrared camera at the same spot should also reveal a ghost, yet it never does.
Yeah. Kinects are kind of creepy anyway, though. Like, they know
I've never done that.
My mom had one and it was spooky. It would say like, "Hello, Karen," or like, "Welcome, Karen." And we're like, "Oh, God."
No, that's, I don't like that. Nope. Okay.
That's not even a ghost. That's
big
just technology.
Note for me. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Alexa kind of freaks me out too sometimes.
Yeah, that's why I don't have one. She's creepy.
Yeah. Chris really likes the whole smart house concept. I'm on the fence about it, but we're compromising.
Gross.
I know. And then there's the ovulus, a square monitor with two short antennas sticking out, despite its makers clarifying that it is sold as an entertainment device only. Its high-tech status is too much for wealthier ghost hunters to resist. The ovulus picks up on electromagnetic energy, assigns a number to it, and this number corresponds to a word in the dictionary. The device is programmed with it. An artificial voice speaks out the word. It is thus a more elaborate and at $549 more costly version of the spirit box. Ghost hunters don't typically hunt ghosts. They hunt anomalies. So they generate as much noise as possible with the instruments they deploy on location, then comb through this noise for any signal. The signal is never clearly coming from the dead, but the ghost hunters use motivated reasoning and our brain's ability to see patterns, even where there are none, to fit a murky signal to a narrative. Investigations are almost always carried out in the dark, which invites even more noise. That's the other thing that's funny, I think, about our society in general is if you do it in the dark, it's automatically like bad or creepy or weird. Like, for example, my religion professor, like when we were talking about like cults and rituals and like all these things, she was like, if you guys, so at Sweetbriar, there are secret clubs. And she was like, if you guys were out here in the middle of the day doing your secret club stuff and not at night, it would be fine. No one would care at all. But because it's done at night, everyone's like all up in arms about it.
It's unknown. The fear of the unknown.
Right. No, exactly. And that's so true, I feel.
It's very true.
Anyway. The manner in which the search for ghosts is conducted has not changed significantly since its inception. The instruments may be more expensive, but in the way in which they are used is the same. Quote, it's not progression, Kenny Biddle noted. It's more like a sidestep. Honestly, there's no progression from the late 1800s.
Yeah.
He is just coming for them, which I love. Yeah. Honestly, we love that.
I mean, they use also, this is what baffles me too, just talking about the equipment really quickly. The other thing that they use is like heat signal devices, which is kind of dumb because no one can decide on what signal decides whether there's a ghost. Because if you're telling me that, oh, well, the ghost is cold, there's nothing there, how are you picking up a heat signal indicating that something is there when there's no heat associated with the ghost, right?
Right. Right.
That doesn't make any sense. If it's red, there's no possible way
I know
that it's a ghost.
Right.
Right.
It's, anyway. I know.
Yeah.
It's, the thing is like they have to identify the ghost in like a controlled environment. And there's no way that they would be able to do that.
No, the world is too vast and there's too many things in the way.
Right.
That's why it's weird that they go to like these abandoned places or these places that are known for X, Y, and Z, and they're just like, well, you see it here. And it's like, well, no, not really. I don't.
You know, the Queen Mary is a good example of this because it's an old, decrepit ship. Like, of course, there's going to be weird noises and like stuff happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's but I like the content, but it's weird.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So he also says the lack of progress is the hallmark of pseudosciences.
I like that. It's a very bold statement.
Okay, but most ghost hunters do mean well, which I agree with.
Sure.
You know, both Biddle and Plouf remarked that they mean well, but there are grifters in their midst.
Mm-hmm.
Plouf showed me a clip from, and not me specifically, but like the interviewer, from a popular ghost hunting show in which an investigator is seen switching their EMF meter on with their finger to get the lights to turn on in response to a question.
Rude.
The investigator probably did not realize the camera was on him at the time, and it was shot in the dark with an infrared camera. Plouf was also asked to analyze sound recordings made by the ghost hunters where the sound wave, once looked at using the right software, clearly showed editing.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to make the ghost say something when you insert a fake clip into the actual recording.
Go figure. That's TV, friends.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. For Biddle, there are many aspects of ghost hunting that could be tightened, log your data, collect base readings in different conditions, you know, very sciencey, scientific method vibes.
Mm-hmm.
When the presumed haunted house is empty versus full, during the day versus at night, in summer versus winter. If you're going to measure electromagnetic fields, for some reason, get a tri-field meter, which is more precise. And when asking questions to potential ghosts, ask the same question over and over again to see if you get the same answer.
Let's see. That's, yeah.
That's or, science, my friends.
Or you just annoy the ghost and they just stop talking to you because you're dumb and you keep asking the same question.
Right. No, exactly.
I told you the first time. I'd be a really annoyed ghost.
He also says, stop watching ghost shows. and that I will not be abiding by. Sorry about it.
Do what you want.
But he recommends books like Benjamin Radford's Investigating Ghosts, The Scientific Search for Spirits, Sharon Hill's Scientifical Americans, The Culture of Amateur Paranormal Researchers, and any book by Joe Nickel.
Nice.
So that's some reading out there for you guys who are interested.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So, Ghost Hunting 101.
Are you taking me to school now?
I am.
Okay, great. I'm ready.
So now that you know what ghost hunting is, you can make those determinations for yourself. We're going to talk about how you would actually do it.
Okay, let's go.
Ghost hunting is the process of investigation places with reputations of being haunted. These locations run the gamut from private homes, castles, businesses, battlefields, jails, etc. Everyone has a preferred technique, but basically you can do interviews, scientific methods, psychic methods. The key to finding the combination that works best for you, which usually comes with practice.
Okay.
This is an ever-evolving field of exploration, and thanks to the many television shows on cable, it has gained a wider acceptance by the general public. So you can be out here in the middle of the day ghost hunting if you want.
It's like the cheese man. Just make your own cheese. Just do your own ghost hunting.
That's right. Everyone has a different reason for getting into ghost hunting. This often drives how they conduct their investigations. There is no right or wrong way to ghost hunt, but it is a good idea to have a basic understanding of what you might expect before heading out into the field. So again, just keep in mind what we just talked about, okay? But this is like for funsies, all right?
Yes, I like it.
Here are some things we talk about. Okay. So just some fun little terms. I won't go through all of them. I'll go through some of them. So an apparition is a visual representation of disembodied entity. This might take the full form of a person or appear as a faint mist.
Ominous wind.
A cold spot. Very self-explanatory. A cold patch of air. A draft, if you will.
I'm feeling a bit of a breeze.
Ghosts draw energy from the air, which leaves it cold. Mm-hmm.
But this is why it's like back and forth, because they're like, oh yeah, cold spot, but then it shows red. Cold does not indicate red, sir.
Girl, I know.
It's so weird. Why y'all doing that?
I don't know. Ectoplasm, which you've heard that word if you've watched any of the Ghostbuster movies.
Ghostbusters.
It is okay. Mist associated with paranormal activity.
Getting a lot of copyright this episode.
An entity, which is an intelligent being who may or may not have been human at some time.
Okay. May or may not. Are we talking about cats?
Girl, like, I don't
what
know.
Are we talking about ghost cats?
Ghost lights, which are unexplained lights that appear in groupings, usually outdoors.
Are we talking about UFOs now? Wait a minute. We went from ghosts to UFOs very fast.
Poltergeist, which is a paranormal activity that results in a psychic kinetic energy, usually an outflow of pent-up emotions. A shadow person or people are one of the most controversial terms in the field, but some say these are human spirits who couldn't fully manifest. Others say these are non-human entities with malicious intent.
Rude.
That sounds terrifying.
Yes.
A vortex is a central point of spiritual activity or energy. And there are a couple different types of hauntings. One is a conscious haunting, which is sometimes referred to as an intelligent haunting. And these are ghosts or entities that are aware that you're there.
Okay.
And they're interactive.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Think
very
Casper nice. The Friendly Ghost.
Oh, right. Like kind of thing. We're friends. Yeah.
There's residual hauntings, which are the type of haunting is energy that has been left behind and is like a tape recorder playing back. So it doesn't know you're there, and any interaction is purely coincidental. But these hauntings generally take form of an activity being repeated over and over again on certain days of the week, months or years, something like that. Okay. There is human versus non-human. So human spirits were once people who walked this earth. Non-human spirits are entities that never had a human form. There are a range of beings that fall into the non-human category, such as elementals, demons, animals.
I'm just gonna have an army of ghost cats.
I think that's reasonable.
I think so. Yeah.
Attachments. This is a kind of haunting that occurs when a spirit or energy has been attached to an object. Think Horcrux, Voldemort, that kind of thing. Okay. Urban legends. These aren't really a type of haunting, but they do warrant a quick discussion. Some locations get built up over time until it's just accepted that the place is haunted. It can be fun to set out on an adventure to investigate the location, but it can also be a waste of time. Most things that require a ritual or repetition of some kind of activity is most likely an urban legend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what equipment do you need to go ghost hunting? You need yourself, a flashlight, and a camera.
Me. Us.
You will most likely add to your personal equipment list over time. It's always good to have batteries. Mm-hmm. Digital video recorder is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Infrared, thermal. We talked a lot about electromagnetic mm-hmm. readers. Mm-hmm. That's an option for you.
Sure.
Also first aid kit.
Okay.
Because you could fall, because usually these things take place in the dark. So you could fall.
Okay.
Right. You could trip.
Fair enough.
It's always good to have a first aid kit. Mm-hmm. Or if the ghost tries to like throw something at you, that's Rude. Always a good, yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. Pendulums can be used for communication as an indicator of paranormal activity. They'll also pick up strong electrical frequencies. So that's a good one to take with you.
Okay.
And some personal shielding is always good.
And you can get your ghost detecting kit for $19.99 plus tax.
Essentially, you're establishing a barrier between yourself and the negative influence. So for shielding, you can vocalize your intention or do it silently. So,
okay.
It's like more of a verbal chant situation. Okay. I believe.
Don't
That's
touch
for
me.
Psychic protection
Don't
only.
Don't touch me.
Not for like real protection. Anyway.
Okay. You need sage for that.
Literally. All right. Yeah. So there's a large variety of things that you can have. I mean, anything you've ever seen in a horror movie, you know, like walkie-talkies, yeah. Scissors, glow sticks, anything that you might, you know, feel like you need to help illuminate and detect your ghost. All right. I mean,
just play Phasmophobia and then you'll know all the equipment you need.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. All right. So some general tips just for safety. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Never go ghost hunting alone, especially okay. if it's in a woods that you've never been to before.
True.
Always have permission. This is a legal issue. No trespassing.
Right. Don't just go into people's houses and buildings, people.
Yeah. Or historical landmarks.
Yeah.
Et cetera. Right. Okay.
Right.
Educate yourself about the location before you go. This can help eliminate an urban legend situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bring extra batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Know how to work your equipment before you go.
We'll just figure it out when we get there. It's fine.
Be professional. I think that's my favorite one.
Wear a suit. You want to look nice for the ghost.
All right. Also be respectful. I think mm-hmm. this is important, especially if you're in like a graveyard situation.
Yes.
You know, don't stomp on people. All
yes.
right. It's not nice.
Even if you have a peg leg, there's no excuse.
Exactly. It's okay to leave if you don't feel safe. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make you less of a ghost hunter. This is not mm-hmm. about who is the bravest person in the world. This is about detecting ghosts. All
yeah,
right.
If you feel something, get the heck out.
You can always go if you need to go. Trust your instincts. Be observant. Don't get discouraged if nothing happens right away. Don't be afraid to try new techniques or equipment. Be critical of your evidence.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Mm-hmm.
Never go into the field under the influence. Again, safety first. All right.
Drunk ghost hunting.
Pay attention to your surroundings. Don't jump to conclusions. Tie back your long hair, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Know where your team members are. Mm-hmm. That's important because if you detect something,
that's just Steve.
It's just Steve when it's really, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Dress weather appropriate. We don't need anyone dying from hypothermia. Be aware of your camera straps when taking pictures and take off your lens cap. Too.
I was going to say, all it's right? like when you forget to take off your lens cap or put your finger in the middle.
And the most important rule, have fun.
I love this so much.
Okay. All right.
Look, obviously, I think the mood and mode that Blair and I could be wrong, but we kind of skin on the skepticism kind of side.
Totally.
On this topic. But there are plenty of people that live, breathe, and will 100% say they have evidence. And if that's you, that's fantastic. I'm so happy for you. I hope you're having an amazing time. And if you're like us, it's good to have a healthy bit of skepticism, because like Blair said, in this little laundry list of things, you got to be critical. You got to make sure mm-hmm. that what you're seeing is accurate. So just make sure that's the case. And also, I would just like to reiterate the fact of the no trespassing situation. I've seen a lot of TikTok videos of people going into abandoned places where they're not supposed to be. Not only are these places potentially dangerous for you, but also you don't know what's in there or what kind of like yuck you can get. That's besides the ghosts. Okay. The ghosts aren't worried about that.
Be careful too about what you post online. Yeah. Like, don't be disrespectful.
Yeah.
And then put it online, because people will come for you.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, it's ghost hunting, not ghost being rude to and instigative. Okay.
Right.
Be respectful of those who have passed in their history.
That's right.
And I think that that's the most important takeaway.
Don't do anything to someone's grave that you wouldn't do to your grandma's grave. Okay.
That's all right. Very fair. That's fantastic. I think that's a great place to segue out of here.
Yeah, let's do it.
So thanks for coming to the ghost hunting episode. Hopefully you're enjoying these spookier episodes. We will continue to have these through the month of October and maybe even into November, because we're late like that and that's just how we ended up. As always, let us know if you have any questions, comments, concerns, episode topic suggestions, or otherwise at mediocrepodcast@gmail.com. You can also slide into our DMs over on Instagram or TikTok at the exact same handle. And please don't forget to rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. And we aren't currently on Twitch, but we have discussed an idea for potentially maintaining the YouTube channel. So stay tuned for that in the month of January.
We'll keep you guys updated in the new year,
so that you guys know what's going on. And other than that, we will see you next week with another spooktastic episode.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.